Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge. This is show number 70, October 13th, 2014, fast approaching Halloween here. And introducing the show, this is the show, of course, where we showcase new authors. And I'm your host, Tom Riddell, and welcoming back shortly will be co-host Robin Eduardo. The brief intro to today's show, we are going to be talking to author Elaine Chizik, who wrote two books that we're going to be discussing today, Willing and Able, A True Story of Adoption, and Ties That Bind. And she'll be on about quarter after the hour, calling all the way from England, so I hope she doesn't have any problem with the connection there. Also, of course, the Writer's Lounge can be found over at tomriddell.com/blog. Once again, read all of the reviews that I've written over there, and you can listen to the show, each show, in the Blog Talk Radio player located in the upper left-hand corner of that page. Also, of course, find us on Facebook and the Blog Talk Radio site. We're also on Twitter, and you can contact us the old-fashioned way at twl11@yahoo.com. Upcoming guest authors coming up here in the Writer's Lounge on October 27th, we'll bring back author Kevin Folliard with another spooky tale. It's called Valentine Terror Tales, and we're looking forward to that because Kevin's an extremely good storyteller and a great writer also. On November 10th, we have an author by the name of Thomas Riddell on. That would be me. And we're going to have the author Dawn Whitten will be interviewing myself about my book, Pieces of My Path, which I wrote back in 2009. It's a memoir about depression, so I hope you will stay tuned for that one as the tables are turned. Also, you can support Magic Pen Web Design. It offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Fill out the free estimate form over at magicpenwebdesign.com and let Magic Pen help you to sell their next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And now, drumroll, bringing back, we have to do this right. Welcome back to the show, the lovely, the talented, and the always delightful and brilliant, Robin Eduardo.
Oh, thank you. And I don't know so much about brilliant, but it's so nice to be back.
We were just talking off the air about how good you are about bringing up questions to ask the authors. I'm sort of the play-by-play guy, and you're sort of the color commentator who brings in all the nice and fun stuff that we ask. So that's
I'm the Lou, what is it, the Lou Costello to your Bud Abbott.
I guess that would be right, yes.
Yeah, you play the straight man, and I'm the...
Yeah, the other thing that I'd like to mention here, filling in for you while you were gone from away from us, was the ever-evescent Lisa Lee. And she was here, and she filled in for you on several shows, so we want to thank her also for filling in and also for listening, as she does listen to our show. So thank you, Lisa, for all the help that you've done to keep this show rolling. And, of course, I've been out on a medical leave for many, many months, and Robin has been out taking care of her life. So we've both been sort of out there taking care of other things, probably more than writing. But I am happy to say, Robin, that I have just got back into writing my novel, and I heard something about you doing more writing, too.
Yeah, I guess it's appropriate to our topic tonight, because one of the books that we'll be discussing of Elaine's is The Ties That Bind, and that is an erotic book, and I've kind of dipped my tippy toes into creating a publishing imprint that is erotically bent. Wait a minute.
Okay.
Do you get bent?
Yeah, okay. I wasn't going to say that, but you did.
You have to laugh at life. I've always been interested in writing erotica anyway. And so I've kind of decided that, hey, I might as well try publishing some of it for some sort of profit, I suppose. And eventually I am gearing up towards maybe taking some submissions from other authors and expanding it into a true publishing endeavor. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, I don't want to make this show about my stuff. I want to focus on Elaine. But yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Well, it is fun. Yeah, and it is kind of about us, too, because, you know, being writers, we have learned a lot, hopefully over the last several years of the writers we've had on the show. We have learned a lot of how to do this sort of thing, and I know that you'll have a lot of questions for Elaine when she comes on, and I see her in the switchboard queue right now. So she made it all the way to the show and is probably listening to us as we speak. So I want to welcome Elaine and let her know that she did make the first step to being on our show. And the next step will come, of course, at about a quarter after the hour. What I wanted to talk about a little bit here is, okay, a little bit about the erotica, Robin. When you put your book or your story out there, and I'll be asking her this at some point. I'm not sure if I've got that down as a question to ask her, but I wonder how you feel about putting your real name out there, or do you use a pen name?
Well, it would be interesting in how she handled it. And I do have friends that also publish in various genres, so and they all have their own thing. The series that I'm publishing currently, the publishing imprint is called Pink Pussycat Publishing, and it's not fully set up and ready to go for public consumption yet, but I do have the premiere title already out on Amazon, and it's basically, the way I've handled it is I have the publishing imprint's logo, Pink Pussycat Publishing, on the head, like a header on the cover of the book, and instead of and then the title, and instead of having by author Robin Eduardo, or if it's somebody else's, let's say if I publish somebody else, instead of having somebody else's name, well, in their case, I probably would use somebody else's name, but in my own case, I just have it as Pink Pussycat Publishing Presents and left my name off.
Okay.
My name does appear in the copyright notification inside, but that's kind of how I'm handling it, because I'm not exactly sure if I want to promote it. Not that I'm embarrassed by it at all, but I'm not sure if I really want to get my readers confused. No, I don't know. Confused maybe isn't the right word, but
maybe skipping
to color their impression here. To color their impression about what to expect from the story. Because I guess if you're comfortable reading an author for, let's just, well, if it's a romance, let's say I write romance novels, and now all of a sudden I come out with something erotic, that maybe might be acceptable. But people sometimes get impressions based on, like, for example, my other stuff is usually in the horror genre. So then what are they going to think? Oh, well, here's a horror writer, and now she's writing erotica, and is there going to be some type of a cross-genre type of book in the future? I don't know, but, I mean, it's kind of interesting to think about those things, and sometimes the readers are okay with it, and some, you know, they don't like their authors to write about anything else but whatever their favorite genre is, or whatever they're used to seeing them in. So, yeah, I haven't really crossed that bridge yet. So no. I don't know if I can answer it more fully, I guess, until I get there, if for my own experience. But maybe Elaine can tell us, you know, how she feels about it.
Yeah, I also think that, and this isn't talking about erotica, but we're talking about pen names here. I know a lot of authors like to kind of experiment a little bit without putting their full name on a work that they've written. They want to try something different, but they don't want
to be about erotica. It could be if you're a children's book writer and then you write horror. You know, sometimes your audience is like, oh, no, I don't want to read a children's book that was written by somebody who, you know, most people know as a horror writer, because what kind of message? I mean, not that you would put a horrific message in your children's book offering, but it's definitely something to think about from the reader's perspective, you know, how they think.
Yeah, so. And it gets into, once again, pen names. I'm thinking of Stephen King. Mm-hmm. Stephen King and the Richard, was it Richard Bachman?
Did yes,
he
Richard
wrote on
Bachman.
There also?
Yeah, actually, I was also thinking in terms of Anne Rice. We know her for her Interview with the Vampire, you know, her vampire books. But she wrote as Anne, I don't know if I got the name correct, Roquelard, something like that. I know I'm messing up that name. But anyway, she used a pen name for her erotic series, the Sleeping Beauty series, which, by the way, is being re-released because of the whole 50 Shades of Grey success. And I think good old Anne Rice, she wants to come in and show you know, how erotica is really supposed to be written, I guess. I don't, you know.
And I also think
I feel
that,
neither here nor there about either one of the 50 Shades or the Sleeping Beauty series, but it's whatever. That's my opinion.
Sometimes, though, it's also a good idea to maybe flip to a pen name, as in the case of I'm losing my mind here today or what, I don't know, but J.K. Rowling went in to write another book and know very little about that, but apparently didn't get very good reviews. And I guess, you know, everybody plugged her into Harry Potter and they wanted more of that and they didn't get it. They got something entirely different. So maybe it would have worked out better for her in the pocketbook if she had gone to a pen name and done something, and she may have seen a little bit more favorable reviews. But I think once an author gets locked into a genre, that sometimes can happen. So anyway, that's interesting.
I just wanted to say something real quick, and I wish I could remember the specifics of it, but I believe Stephen King had also published something under a pen name, but the reason why he published it under a pen name, maybe it wasn't Stephen King, but for some reason that's what's ringing the bell, that it was, at least as far as the story goes, it was already previously successful, hugely successful author, and he wanted to see if his writing today would merit the same fandom, you know, acceptance, if it was offered under a pen name, just to see, well, do people like my writing because of you know, on the merits of the writing itself, or is it because, you know,
right.
I could pretty much scribble with a crayon and publish it, and people will buy it because I'm Stephen King or whoever it was.
Sure.
And maybe it wasn't. I'm not sure if it was Stephen King, but
a lot of truth to that. Now let's get on with the show, Robin. Here we'll be on the wait. I'm going to introduce Elaine all the way from England. I know it's 1 a.m. over there, so we're going to get the show done, and she'll probably be up and ready to go to bed, or she'll be so excited she won't be able to sleep for hours and hours. But anyway, we're going to be doing something a little bit different here. We're going to be talking about two books, and the first book, excuse me, I'm going to introduce is Willing and Able, A True Story of Adoption. It was written by Elaine Chizik and published by Amazon Digital Services in 2012. And you may purchase it over at amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. And part of my review here, I found myself totally and completely absorbed in the story. When the couple finally received word that they could adopt, I realized that I was choked up with emotion and shouted out, yes. We are taken through all the lengthy and overwhelming adoptive rules, legal steps, and personal narrative that finally led up to the couple's dream. Two young children, Julie and James, now have a home with mom and dad. To tell a story takes talent, but to tell a story and hold a reader's interest when the reader may not even be interested in the subject takes a special gift and ability. This is a story about a family and the unlimited love and determination of a couple to make a family and their dreams to come true. And I could not put this book down. So with that, and I will give the review of the later book later on in the interview, but with that, we're going to welcome on now, all the way from England, 1 a.m. in the morning, a lady who loves cherry Coke, by the way, Elaine, how are you?
Hello.
Elaine.
I'm tired, but I'm all right.
good for you. And so what's the weather doing over there right now?
It's very windy right now.
Oh, it is. Okay. Whereabouts in England are you?
I'm northeast, so very near Newcastle-upon-Tyne.
Okay.
Oh, okay. My Diana is stationed in Lackenheath Air Force Base. So Lackenheath, I guess, is kind of up that way, sort of.
Right.
She's in the Air Force and stationed over there.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, Elaine, now that we have you here, after we've waited a long time for you to come on our show, and after reading those two books that you wrote, and once again, I will be talking about Willing and Able, or no, I'm sorry, the Ties and Bind later, but you had expressed an interest to tell us more about the book, Willing and Able. Can you tell us about the book itself and why you decided to write it?
I decided to write it mainly to inform other people that you don't have to be perfect to adopt and to have a family. There's a lot of misconceptions out there around adoption that say, you know, people think you have to be perfect parents, that you have to have money and a perfect house and everything like that, and it's just not true. And there was a lot of sort of mystery surrounding the whole adoption process. And so I just wanted to let people know what it was really like, what it entailed, what you had to go through to have a family. And that's basically what I did.
And one question I have, I was just thinking about this because I had indicated in the review that I do not have children, but I would have liked to have had them at one time in my life. And I'm wondering, how does the adoption agencies over there or even here in the United States, I don't know how much research you've done or how much you know about our process, but I'm wondering how they would feel towards a single parent adopting one child or two children.
I definitely know over here that they have not got a problem with single parent adoptions. It's something that came in I don't know if it was just before we adopted or just after we adopted, that they basically have no problem with same-sex couples adopting or single parents adopting. Their main concern is that you can provide a home for a child.
Excellent. That's really great.
So, you know, I'm not 100% sure on age range. Obviously, there's going to be an upper age limit, and you have to be older than 18 because you have to be an adult yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But with regards to same-sex couples and single parents, they are all for it.
Oh, great. That's fantastic to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Robin, you got a question?
No, I'm just curious, her whole process. You're the adoptive parent, is the story fictitious, like based on a true story, or?
Yes.
Oh, this is her story.
I'm asking because I'm not a reader. I'm just here, kind of like listening in and asking questions as I hear you tell your story. So the process of adoption is very similar in the UK as it is to the United States then.
I'm not 100% sure because we had nothing to do with adopting a child from the States.
Right, right.
Obviously, I didn't have to research anything to do with adopting
mm-hmm.
the States. And because the story is true and happened to me and I lived it,
mm-hmm.
it's basically everything that I've written is literally from my memory and from my diary to remind me of those memories. So it's nobody else's story. It's not a story that somebody sat down and said, oh, Elaine, this is what happened to us. Why don't you write it down? It's a story that I went through, that I lived, that I did with my husband and obviously the children. But talking of pen names, yes, I do write under a pen name. And the
mm-hmm.
main reason I wrote under a pen name is because of the confidentiality involved in adopting children.
Yeah.
Obviously, the confidentiality that their birth parents can't sort of find them and sort of turn up on my doorstep. Just the confidentiality of maybe I don't want people where I live that are in my children's circle to know their story unless the children themselves want to tell their friends.
All
and
right.
So, yeah, that is why I do write under a pseudonym. But that doesn't take away from the story being not true because it is true.
Yes.
But, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I do write under a pseudonym. And when I wrote the fiction, I then had a choice to make. Do I write under my pseudonym? Do I write under my real name? Or do I choose another name to write under?
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I chose to stick with the same pseudonym.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And we know the story, obviously, is about your life and all the process you took to go through to make a family, which you did with your husband. But I'm wondering now, James and Julie, I was wondering how they're doing. And I also am interested in the subject of reconnecting with birth parents and some advice mm-hmm. and what someone could do in that respect.
Well, it's different for every child that's adopted. The children don't have any contact with the birth parents whatsoever. Now, that decision is made by the judge who puts the adoption order together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have signed an agreement to say that by the time the children are 18, they will know about their past. And we were actually given life storybooks that are photograph albums that tell them their story in children's words. And we basically agreed that by the time they were 18, they would know all about their past. I mean, they know all about the past now.
Mm-hmm.
But when they get to 18, if they want to go and find their birth parents, then that decision is then theirs. But as for contact with them now, the judge basically said, when we adopted them, no contact with the birth parents until they are adults and they can make that decision themselves. So that is not something we decide for them.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, it's something that the courts decided.
I like the idea of the personal story books. I do like that, and that they'll be able to go through it in more detail and look through the pictures and look through the information there, and that you're willing to open those doors if that's what they want to do. Because
that's,
I think,
right.
Kids, they're always going to be curious. If they know that they're adopted, they're going to be curious and to know that they can get that information, that you're open to sharing that information.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Elaine, we're going to move on here into your fiction story here. The fiction story,
okay,
of course, being Ties at Vine, and I'm going to read you a little bit of the review that I wrote. Ties at Vine was, once again, written by Elaine Chizik and published by Create Space Independent Publishing Platform in 2014. And you may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. And a little bit of my review, I wrote, the author of this tale paints a wonderfully detailed story between two people, their families, and their beautiful and affluent surroundings. The story flows very nicely, and the characters in the story are believable and interesting to follow. Details of place and body movement, especially during the erotic scenes in the story, are amazing and breathtaking. The emotions will pour over you in this one, so be prepared. The only flaw I found in the story was a lack of conflict in the first 25% of the book, but conflict picks up after that, making for a very interesting read. This is the author's first novel, and her skills as a writer in this first attempt is to be highly praised. It's just the beginning to a wonderful future as a writer and accomplished author. And kind of adding on to that, Elaine, I'd like to ask you, when you move from writing nonfiction to fiction, how easy was that for you?
Well, first of all, ever since I was sort of 15 and just leaving school, I wanted to be a librarian, believe it or not. And secretly, I also wanted to be a writer. And so at 15, me and one of my other friends, one of my very close friends who I'm still in touch with now, used to sit and write stories, little bits of rubbish, you know, just playing with words. And I sort of, you know, you grow up, you get a job, you get on with life, you get a family, and these bits of paper just get pushed into a file and pushed to one side. Now, I'm a big reader. I will read practically anything. And then after I'd wrote Willing and Able, I kind of sat back and thought, I really enjoyed writing it. I'm going to try fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled these three stories out. I've got three stories that I've still got from when I was 15. And I pulled these three stories out and had a look through them. Absolutely killed myself laughing at the naivety of what I'd written. Absolutely killed myself laughing. But I found the basics of Ties That Bind. The bare bones were there. The ending was there. The beginning was there. The characters were there. They had different names, and there were a lot of silly situations that obviously I took out of the book. But the actual basis was there, and I emailed the friend who I used to go to school with, and I just sent her an email that said, I'm going to try fiction. And she sent me an email back within about 10 minutes saying, go for it. So I did. I sat down
awesome.
And I started writing.
Did she ever read any of those little short snippets that you had saved away?
When I was 15, yes, she did.
Oh, so, great. So you had an early fan or whatever you would call it. Great supporter.
A supporter,
awesome.
Definitely a great supporter.
Yeah, wow. That's awesome.
Yep. Yeah, we all need support, that's for sure. As I've been writing on my book now for, 4 or 5 years, my novel,
mm-hmm.
and still not mm-hmm. done. So when somebody comes along like Elaine, it gives me a lot of inspiration for sure, and that's very commendable. And also to have somebody there to help you along is wonderful and really needed these days. especially with the very busy lives that we live. And I'm sure you live the same busy lives over there in England, too,
yeah,
besides
definitely.
Just being here in the United States. So, anyway, the main characters, Alex and Gabe, and Ties the Vine, let's get to them. And the story takes place in America. And have you ever been here, and how and why did you pick the place where the story would be told from?
I've never been. I have an unexplainable affection for America, and I have never been, but I do hope to get there one day. I'm not 100% sure why I chose for Alexandra to be Italian and for Gabriel to be American. My characters tell me these things. It's really strange, and it makes me sound absolutely mad. But sometimes they tell me these things, and I just have to listen to them.
Yeah.
And for the story, for the characters, for the way they are, and for the way the story is, it just works.
Yeah, well, why not? I mean, the people write about ancient Roman gladiators, for example. Well, I mean, I know I'm old, but I'm not old enough to have lived back in ancient Roman times. So why couldn't you write about, you know, another time or another place or, you know, different people? I mean, your imagination takes you wherever you want to go. So
yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Elaine,
and to be honest,
yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, the access that we have to research these days
exactly.
mm-hmm. makes it easier.
Yeah.
Adding to that, I'm wondering, Elaine, did you happen to use Google Maps when you were kind of researching the area where they would be?
I used Google Street View a lot.
Okay.
She was
okay.
stalking people.
Yeah,
and,
I was.
Elaine, I think Elaine, where you had the characters meeting was in Central Park, and that would be very close to where Robin lives.
Yeah.
So they could have thrown a stone and hit Robin's house, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'm only right across the water from the city, so that's funny.
Excellent. Well, they met in Thomas Paine Park, which is mm-hmm. near the courts, and they did have a trip to Central Park, and I remember getting on Facebook and messaging a friend of mine who lives in New York and saying to him, right, what is Central Park like? What's the cafe mm-hmm. like? How is there a clock on the wall? Because I want to mention a clock on the wall. And it took him ages to come back to me with the answer.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to be able to have the ability to do that, whereas in maybe 20, 30 years ago, you didn't have that ability. But now, or back then, I imagine you'd go to the library and do a lot of research on what everything looked like. Now you can do it in a matter of minutes on Google Maps.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I mean, it's not just Google. There's other research areas. I'm a firm believer in asking people who have experienced certain things to tell me, you know, what it was like for them to go through a certain experience. You know, there's no better way of writing something than actually going through that experience yourself. But if you can't or haven't, then the next best thing is to ask somebody that has.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what's your ties with Italians? Do you have Italians in your family, or do you know Italians?
No, I don't have any Italian in my family. I like Italian food. Does that count?
You're what?
She likes Italian food, so she wants to know if that counts, Tom.
Oh, okay. I guess that does
Italian
count.
People are just so attractive, so that's
uh-huh.
probably played into it too. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I have a couple of friends who are Italian, Michaela and Jen, and they sort of are my go-to girls if I want to ask about a particular tradition or a phrase that sometimes
mm-hmm.
Alexandra will speak in Italian. So I will go to Michaela and Jen and say, look, would they say it this way? Would they say it that way? You know, how would they cook this? How would they cook that? Traditions at Christmas and things like that. And they always sort of come back and say, well, no, they wouldn't do it this way because she comes from Naples, not Roma or whatever. So, yeah, I do have people that will sort of put me on the right thread with that.
Yeah, they have a very intense, powerful aura around them, especially of the characters that you wrote about in your book. Reminds me of a soap opera over in this country, Days of Our Lives, where there's some Italian guys in there. But I don't know if anybody watches that program, but there's some Italian.
You were probably watching a lot of it while you were recuperating from your surgery.
I was.
Is that what happened?
I was, actually.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
I knew. How do you feel about writing the sex scenes? I mean, I'm just curious how you feel about it, because I know for me, I mean, I have kids running around in the house, and I mean, not little kids, but I mean, that would really be difficult for me. But I mean, I can't have anybody around at all, not even in the other room. I have to have total, like, I just cannot have any distractions, and I have to kind of be in that kind of mood. So, I mean, how were you, oh, goodness. I mean, how was it for you writing the sex scenes? I mean, humana, humana, humana.
But the first one I wrote, the first sex scene I wrote, which is in the book, I don't know if, Tom, you remember the one where they're in the stable.
Mm. Yes.
Right, well, that's the first sex scene I actually wrote, because I write out of order. And it actually took me 2 full days to get that one little scene together. Because I wrote it, and then I read it back, and I just thought, oh, my. And I rewrote it, and I rewrote it, and I rewrote it. And then after that, it wasn't as difficult, the actual sex part of it. It was finding a way to make it different, like a different place or a different time or a different way sort of thing. But I listen to a heck of a lot of music. And so regardless of who's in the house and what they're getting up to, I can just stick my little earbuds in and listen to my music and concentrate on writing rather than anything else.
Sure. I'm also wondering about the audience that you write for, and you're doing the erotic scene. Is there anything about that that disturbs you or makes you rethink when you're writing that maybe you're going to be turning off, pardon the pun, a few members of your audience, or turning on a few members of your audience?
Do you know, I've spoke to a few authors about the difference between erotica and pornography, and a lot of people say that there's no difference. Sex is pornography, it's also erotica. There's other people that say, well, you know, sex is a natural part of life, and it's only pornographic if you start adding other things, like other people or other toys, let's call them.
Yeah, crossing lines.
Yeah, there is none of that in Ties That Bind at the moment. And so I'm not sure, really. I'm hoping I'm not turning anybody off with it.
Right.
But, you know, like every book out there, people have a choice whether they want to read it or not. And if they don't want to read it, that's absolutely fine. If they do want to read it, go ahead.
Yeah, but I also want to reiterate, I think what you were mentioning earlier about there's a difference between pornography and sex scenes and love, basically is what we're dealing with here, because it's written in a different way, and it's and then, of course, you know, I've been in a discussion with a friend of mine just recently about, you know, writing about a sex scene without even writing about the actual, you know, the act itself,
mm-hmm.
Or you can make an implication that something happened, and it can be just as strong as what you wrote. So I find it very interesting and curious about when an author such as yourself sits down and wonders how are they going to put that on paper and what the implications of that are. But there's a lot of people out there that seek it, And I think if it's done very tastefully and in the way that you did it especially, I think it's a very moving experience. No pun intended.
Yeah, I think that was a very good point to bring up, though, because some people think all erotica is pornographic. And then, you know, and then people sometimes will say, well, maybe it's not pornographic enough, that it's really only sexual situations, but in the context of being a romantic story. So for some people, it's not enough. And for others, it's too much. So it's really hard to play to one specific audience. Even if you're writing, say, a BDSM theme, there's people who are in that world that might say, oh, well, I don't really see anything truly, what they would consider truly BDSM, whereas somebody else who might be a little bit more restrained sexually. No, I'm not restrained. That was a bad word, wasn't it? But you know what I mean, that are a little bit more conservative, I guess, would be a better word. they should be restrained. that might think that it's way over the top, that it's too much, that it has no place in a romantic, you know, romance and sex should be two separate things. So, yeah, I can definitely see how to each their own, and you just write to the best.
You're always going to get somebody that disagrees with you.
Yeah.
You're always
so you write the best story.
You're always going to get somebody that, you know, sort of doesn't like what you do, and you're always going to get somebody that absolutely loves what you do. You know, there's just shy of 3 billion people with access to the internet, which means there's just shy of 3 billion people with access to my books. And I can't please everybody at the same time. And
so that would plays into the question in regard to your thoughts on good and bad reviews. You know, if you've had, let's just say, for example, if you got 3 straight 1 or 2 star reviews, would you still write and hang in there, or would you just say, "Oh, forget it, I'm just not going to write this anymore"? I mean. Because I hear you saying you would write no matter what, but I'm just curious, you know, if you could.
I wouldn't give up. If I got one and two star reviews, I would not give up writing. I might pause for a month and think, well, what am I doing wrong? What can I change? You know, but it wouldn't stop me writing, because at the end of the day, I wanted to read a story. And I couldn't find the book that told the story that I wanted to read, so I wrote it myself.
Good attitude.
So, first and foremost, I write for me, because I want to read these particular stories. And if they're not there, I'm going to write them. And so that's why I write. And if it just so happens that I put them out there and other people enjoy them, then yay!
Yeah, because everybody's going to have an opinion. Everybody's going to. So you're saying that you're going to look at those. If you did, hypothetically, if you did receive a 3 straight 1 or 2 star reviews in a row, instead of kicking yourself and saying, I must be a failure at this, you're actually going to take those reviews and try to find something constructive within them and use it to improve your writing endeavor. Fantastic. Yeah. I love to hear that. Love it.
Yeah. And Elaine,
luckily, I've not got any yet.
I want to let everybody know on the Writer's Lounge here is you can call in. I failed to mention at the top of the show. If you want to call in and talk to Elaine or any one of us, 626-213-5613 or 877-878-1436. And we've got about 15 minutes left. And I think you may have touched on this, Elaine, but what inspires you to sit down and write on any given day? I mean, where do you like to go? What's your perfect place to go when you write?
Believe it or not, I don't have a perfect place. I will write anywhere.
Oh, wow.
We've got a little cubby hole at home which houses all the rubbish, all the CDs and the bits of paper and the files and the DVDs and even the ironing board and the desk.
Wow.
I will quite often sit in there.
She has little squares of toilet paper in the bathroom with notes.
But no, I've been known to take the laptop to bed and write in bed.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been known to take the laptop down to the beach and sit in the car looking at the beach while I've been writing. I've even taken it to the park when my son was a couple of years younger and he wanted to go to the park. I took him to the park with his mates. He was playing with his friends and I was sat in the car writing.
Aww.
So I will write anywhere. I will write anywhere. And another thing that makes me sound a bit mad, but while ever my characters talk to me, I will write.
Mm.
Very good.
Are you working on a book now?
Yes.
Excellent.
And can you tell us a little bit about it?
It is a follow-up to Ties That Bind.
Okay.
So it's got Alex and Gabe in it again. I'm about 100 and... What was it? The last count was about 117,000 words in. So it's coming on really well. And it was basically... I had a story to tell with Alex and Gabe, and I told the story. And when I got to the end of it, I sat and cried. I was so upset that the story had come to an end. I actually felt like these characters had died. I thought, what am I going to do now? And then about 15 minutes later, this question popped into my head. And the question was, what would Gabriel do if something happened, this particular thing? And I'm obviously not going to tell you what that thing
right,
is.
Right, right.
But from that one question... 15 more questions came at me within a week, and I thought, that's what happens, that's my story, that's what happens to them next. And I sat down and started writing again.
I find that
so you think you might make a... I'm sorry, Tom. I'm just stepping right over you. You're considering writing a series then, or is this just going to be just a part two and then you'll move on, or... did you have enough questions that maybe inspired you to continue further?
Funnily enough, yes. I don't want people to have to buy a whole load of books.
Mm-hmm.
What I set out to write a story from start to finish, and that's what I did with Ties That Bind. And I'm hoping with the next one that it has a beginning and a middle and end. That you don't necessarily need to read them all in succession. You could pick any one of them up and sort of pick up what these characters are doing, what happens to them, and the resolve at the end of it. You know, everything gets tied up and finished. But during the course of writing this one, I have sort of, you know, a new character's come to light where I could go off at a tangent and look at their life and what happens to them in another book.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, it's one thing sort of leads on to another, but it's nothing set in concrete, because one day I could ask myself a question about a particular character and never get the answer. So at the moment, yes, there's definitely going to be a follow-up to Ties That Bind. I'm not sure when it's going to come out, but it is going to come out. After that, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I find it very interesting, Elaine, that you had mentioned in a Facebook post how a character seemed to just come into the story and dictated to you where she was from and who she was. And when that happens, it's very strange, because, to be honest with you, I wonder sometimes if we're not schizophrenic and we bring in all these people into our lives, because we're... You know, we're writers, but when they start taking on such a strong demeanor and they tell you, no, you're going to write about me and this is what you're going to say and this is how you're going to say it, I find that very, very fascinating and very exciting at the same time, and a little disturbing, to be honest with you.
It is. I mean, I was sat writing, I think it was last weekend, and that there are days when I will literally sit with my fingers hovered over the keyboard and nothing will happen. Nothing will come because nobody's talking to me. And I just don't know what a character will do, or I don't know what they'll say right now, or I've got no idea where I'm going. And I thought, I've got really, really angry with myself. And then I thought, oh, do you know what? If you don't want to talk to me, that's fine. I'm going into the kitchen to make a cake. So I shut the computer down, went into the kitchen, started making a cake. And within about half an hour, Gabriel had popped into my head. He wanted to make a cake. And then suddenly I've got this scene in my head where he wants to make a cake and he ends up burning it. And I just thought it was just so, whether it'll make it into the book or not, I think it will because I've managed to work it in. But it was just so him and so the characters, I just had to go back and sit down and write it. And so I did. And it's great when they do that. And that makes me sound absolutely Fruit Loops, but yeah, it's great when they do that.
How does your husband deal with all this writing?
It keeps me out from under his feet.
Okay.
It lets him watch his sports or whatever
exactly.
He does.
Exactly. He's got control of the TV remote while I'm writing, so he can watch all these silly makeover programs and car programs and, you know, all this wheeler dealers rubbish and things. So he's quite happy to just let me get on with it because he gets control of the TV.
There you go. Solve that problem.
How about James and Julie? Are they supportive too?
They are actually very. They regularly come home and tell me that I need to start paying them for advertising my books at school.
Aww.
Okay.
Especially my son who comes home and I've told my friend's mum to get your book. I've told her that she'll enjoy it. I mean, they both know the story. They don't know the ins and outs of, you know, the rude bits, let's call them, but they mm-hmm. know the story. So, and obviously they know I've written a book about them and they're quite beaming about that. So, they are supportive. The whole bunch of them are, really.
That's good. That's good to have that kind of support, as you were talking earlier about having a friend. And Elaine, we are coming to the end of our program. We've only got a little over 7 minutes left. And I want to thank you again for being on our show. And I want to ask you, are you nervous?
Not anymore.
See? I knew we would do it.
But I have been for about a week.
Aww.
Robin and I both have some good drugs that we inject you with. We're not even aware of it happens. So,
I've had my vanilla coke, so I'm all right.
Oh, my vanilla coke! Yeah, I miss my vanilla coke. But anyway,
I thought it was a cherry coke.
Oh no, cherry coke is what they have. Cherry coke is what they have. Vanilla coke is what I like.
Wait, they might have a cherry vanilla coke.
As it might do. Well, the cherry coke is a big thing. I like the cherry coke, but I've got some cherry coke lip balm that's in the story. But Thomas mentioned something on Facebook about not being able to get vanilla coke anymore. And so when I popped out to the shops the other day, I actually found a bottle of vanilla coke. So I had to take a picture of it to send to Tom, just to say, ha ha, look what I've got.
That's great. And Elaine, any passing thoughts or advice that you'd like to leave us with and our listeners?
Just thank you for having me on. Thank you so much for making me feel so relaxed, actually. I've actually really enjoyed it, and I want to come back again.
Well, write another book.
Oh, you'd
book.
Be welcome to.
Yeah.
An advice for anybody wanting to write, just write. Just do it. Don't think about it. Just do it. Sit down and write. If you want to write, sit down and write. Worry about everything else afterwards, but while the ideas are in your head and you've got the determination to do it, do it.
Yes, and then where can our listeners reach you on the web?
I've got a Facebook page. If you just search Elaine R. Chizik, and that's spelled C-H-I-S-S-I-C-K. I'm on Twitter at Elaine R. Chizik, but I've also got a website that's got some snippets from the book and some pictures and things, and that's www.elainechizik.wix, which is W-I-X, .com/Chizik Chat, all one word.
Very good. Very good. And so, Elaine, it's been a pleasure once again to have you on to talk about both of your books. The Ties That Bind, and the other one, of course, Willing and Able, A True Story of Adoption. And we look forward
Thank
to
you.
having you
Thank
on
you.
The Writer's Lounge again. And go get some sleep now, okay?
Yes, if I can come down, I'll go get some sleep.
Yeah, right. She's
so going
to be wired till the next day.
I am.
Take care, Elaine.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's always fun, Robin, to talk to authors, especially when they're calling at 1 a.m. in the morning.
I know. What a sacrifice. Good for her,
yeah,
though.
Absolutely. And it's and once again, it's a real pleasure to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
You're wonderful to have as a co-host, and I really appreciate it. And I'm not just saying that, of course, and you know that. But
I know.
Anyway, on October 27th, we are going to have back Robin, Kevin and Follier. Do you remember him?
Mm-hmm.
And he's written this time Valentine Terror Tales. So it's sort of a Halloween / Valentine's Day kind of show coming up here on October 27th. And I hope you'll tune in. It was really, really good. The guy outdoes himself. Can't even talk right. He outdoes himself every time when he writes. And he's great to have on the show. And then, of course, on November 10th, I will be here being interviewed by Don Whidden, who is also an author that's been on the Writer's Lounge. And,
yes.
And Hope, Robin, you will be there to
yes.
help Don along as you both interview me on my book. So that'll be fun, too.
Yes, it will. I look forward to it.
Yeah. Any passing or final comments you'd like to make?
Wow, on the spot. I didn't really think of anything to say other than it's really great to be back. Tonight went by. It just flew by so fast. I enjoyed myself and enjoyed speaking to Elaine and, of course, catching up with you. And I look forward to many more shows. And we ought to have a lot of fun in the future. And I'm just so excited to be back.
Yeah, it's great. Great having you, Robin. And join us next time and let the story begin. Goodbye.
trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part.